This is Kathy coming to you with the Pantograph for Tuesday, July the 21st. Looking at the headlines today on the first page, less tragedy, more learning. Interactive Romeo and Juliet helps kids make good choices. And this is done the Illinois Shakespeare Festival's Theater for Young Audiences production is performed on Tuesday, July 16th at the grounds of the Ewing Cultural Center in Bloomington. So it's an outdoor theater, so there's a nice picture of kids sitting on blankets out in the grass and the actors in front of the props. Illinois Shakespeare Festival. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival's Theater for Young Audiences teaches children how to think through and make good decisions with Get Set, Romeo and Juliet, a retooled play that gives kids the option to rewind the play and test out alternate endings to the classic tragedy. The 40-minute show opened on Thursday, June 25th, and will continue at 10 a.m. every Thursday and Saturday morning on the Ewing Cultural Center's grounds until the show closes on August 1st. The play is designed to be fun for the whole family with free admission. My wife loves theater, and it's just getting the kids active at a young age and getting them to see it, said Logan Calvin of Why His Whole Goes to the Play. I think his whole family goes to the play. He has been seeing the youth shows with his wife and children since their oldest, Lucy, 3, was just a baby. Now they are accompanied by their other children, Henry, 2, and Oliver, who is 7 months old. Also, Lucy, in particular, just absolutely loves it and asks, once you go once, will you come back every week, Calvin said. Calvin said he appreciates the theater's role in teaching kids valuable message and fun, an engaging way that align with family values, he said. And he believes that the theater helps his children to internalize lessons, sometimes better than direct parental instruction. If you go, it's called the Illinois Shakespeare Festival's Get Set, Romeo and Juliet. It's at the Ewing Cultural Center grounds, 48 Sunset Road in Bloomington, and it runs from, today, July 23rd, at 10 a.m., July 23rd, 25th, 30th, and August 1st. It's free. It takes 40 minutes. You can go to Illinois Shakes and illinoisshakes.com. If they see it in the theater, they're more likely to represent it throughout their daily lives, Calvin said. And I think I see that with our family, and I would rather have them watch an enjoyable theater, get something out of it, than us just trying to constantly tell them what is right and wrong. And during Thursday's show, the Calvin family got to see exactly when actors took the grounds, advising the audience, what you do is up to you. The play includes interactive theater with sound effects, music, dancing, and even chanting. At the beginning of the show, actors establish the family feuds, splitting the audience halfway down, with stage left rooting for the Capulets, and while stage right, the Montagues. Throughout the show, actors encourage the kids to root for their team by chanting, "Give 'em a woo for Montague," and "Ready, set, Capulet." And during the most critical poor decision-making in the show, actors led children down their rewind, showing alternate ways to deal with conflict that don't result in tragedy. Writer Nancy Steele Brokaw said that the story for children, she wanted some modification from Shakespeare's original, the fantastic play, which is also featured in the Illinois Shakespeare Festival this summer at the theater on Ewing grounds. Kids will leave here knowing the story the way Shakespeare wrote it, but we also added a feature where we do a pause and rewind, Steele Brokaw said. We've made some modifications to the show that sends a better message to kids, one of empowerment, not drinking sketchy things out of sketchy bottles, and taking a minute to stop and think, and then make a different decision. The writer noted how children are often put into difficult positions, such as cyberbullying and peer pressure, and she said she wanted to give children an outlet that would empower them to think, what you do is up to you. And the actors who lead children down their journey of thought through decision-making are also the best actors, Steele Brokaw says. She called Jeremiah King, who plays Romeo, a rock star, citing his ability to use props and scenery, leaping on and off the raised balcony made for the set by the festival's set designer, John Stark. Juliet is played by Sophia Joyce, while Rosemary Urban plays the part of Nurse, Andrew Faber plays Lord Capulet and Tybalt, Chris Ramshaw plays Mercutio, Funny Morningbird, Balthazar an Apothecary, and Everett Perval plays Prince Aeschylus and Friar Lawrence. The actors are the festival's interns, and they come from all over the country, Steele Brokaw noted, with a couple who are from Illinois State University. The intern actors also get to play parts in all three of the festival's main shows, she said. And if you'd like more information, you can contact Caitlin Klepek at 309-820-3345. This next front page headline reads, fewer houses being built, mortgage rates and supply glut slow construction. And there's a picture here of a multi-home residential project by Shea Homes in Encinitas, California. And they are separate homes, but they are all built right up next to each other. Reminds me of the old city lots where the houses are only 6 feet apart. Economy. Washington. The U.S. single-family home building fell for a third straight month in June, while permits for future construction dropped to the lowest level in 10 months, weighed down by higher mortgage rates and a glut of unsold new homes on the market. Home building also is constrained by rising costs for land and materials. Builders and economists say it would take a while for the housing market to benefit from bipartisan housing affordability legislation that Congress recently passed, which, among other provisions, waives or speeds up environmental reviews for construction projects. The bill became law despite President Donald Trump refusing to sign it, demanding that a separate voting bill be passed. The potential uplift to housing starts from streamlining environmental reviews, easing rules on manufactured housing, and encouraging zoning reform. It will take time to filter through, said Samuel Toombs, chief U.S. economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. Real residential investment will drag modestly on GDP growth over the coming quarters. Single-family housing starts, which account for the bulk of home building, slipped to 0.2% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 895,000 units, the Commerce Department Census Bureau said Friday. Starts fell in the Northeast and the South and the Midwest, but rose in the West. Single-family home building dropped 3.2% year-over-year in June. Permits for future construction of single-family homes dropped 2.4% to a rate of 871,000 units, the lowest level since August of 2025. They fell a 0.2% year-over-year in June. There is a limited scope for a strong rebound in permits, with the elevated mortgage rates sidelining the potential home buyers. The rate on the popular 30-year fixed mortgage increased by almost 60 basis points since the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran at the end of February. The rate averaged an 11-month high of 6.55%, data from mortgage finance agency Freddie Mac showed Thursday, as oil prices swung wildly as a shaky ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran collapsed. The brief lull in hostilities boosted consumer sentiment in early July across all age and income groups as well as political party affiliation, a separate report showed. The University of Michigan survey of consumers was conducted from June 23rd to July 13th, with more than 70% of interviews completed before resumption of war in the Middle East. Renewed uncertainty surrounding the U.S.-Iran conflict could keep energy prices volatile and weigh on household finances and perceptions of the economy, delaying a broader improvement in consumer sentiment, said Vivian Chen, financial markets economist at Nationwide. The National Association of Home Builders survey on Thursday showed sentiment among single-family home builders remained depressed in July. Though there is a national housing shortage, especially for starter homes, the stock of unsold new homes on the market is back near levels last seen in late 2007 because of a poor spring selling season this year. It felt like builders were finally getting a handle on their inventories, but the clunker of a spring selling season set them back again, said Stephen Stanley, chief U.S. economist at Santander U.S. Capital Markets. As a result, while the level of real residential construction activity should level off soon, the extended downturn that has been in place for 2 years may extend the weakness for another quarter or two. Starts for housing projects with 5 units or more, a very volatile segment, soared 76.3% to a rate of 513,000 units in June. Multifamily housing starts increased 19.3% year-over-year. Overall housing starts jumped 19% to a pace of 1.427 million units. They increased 3.5% year-over-year in June. Building permits for multifamily housing projects dropped 4.9% to a rate of 445,000 units last month. Overall building permits fell 3% to a rate of 1.367 million units. They declined 2.3% year-over-year in June. The housing drag on the economy was likely offset by strength in consumer spending and business investment in equipment, thanks to an ongoing artificial intelligence build-out and restocking of inventories as firms sought to avoid shortages and higher prices related to the Middle East conflict. A third report from the Federal Reserve showed manufacturing output unchanged in June. Production at factories, however, grew at a 4.7% annualized rate in the second quarter, the fastest in 5 years. The report also showed increased utilities production, which feeds into consumer spending. Though reports showed price pressures ebbed in June, inflation is far from contained. A fourth report from the Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics showed an unexpected 0.3% increase in import prices in June, as higher prices for capital and consumer goods more than offset declines in the costs of food and energy products. Economists have forecast import prices, which exclude tariffs, would decrease 0.7%. In the 12 months through June, import prices surged 7.1%, the biggest advance since August 2022, after a 6.6% increase in May. Excluding food and fuels, import prices increased 0.4%. Core imported inflation rose 4.6% in the 12 months through June, boosted by a 0.4% increase in capital goods prices. The report also showed a jump in international airfares, a category that goes into the calculation of the core personal consumption expenditure price index, one of the measures the U.S. Central Bank tracks for its 2% inflation target. The third headline on the front page, fact-finding trip. Normal staff in fact-finding mode weighing data center impacts after Aurora trip. And it shows a picture of a data center owned by CyrusOne, which is being built in Aurora. It's a Texas-based organization which received state backing for the project in 2024. And this was written by Andrew Adams. Normal. Town of Normal staff traveled to Aurora earlier this month with one goal, see and hear a large data center before recommending how the town should regulate one. Normal Planning and Zoning Director Mercy Davison said neither she or other town staff members on the July 2nd trip had previously seen a large data center in person. The group viewed the exterior of the CyrusOne campus and spoke with Aurora planning and zoning officials about the city's experience with the facilities. As a baseline, we needed to see, hear, and look at what these things are, Davison said, noting the town is not currently reviewing a data center proposal. We just need information. Davison said one of the clearest lessons was the importance of where a data center is located in relation to nearby homes. From a trail near the campus, the group could see data center buildings on one side and recently constructed homes on the other. The data center's on the left side and a brand new house is on the right side, Davison said. They're right there. The visit had also allowed Normal staff to see sound reduction measures installed around rooftop chillers, which Davison said had been identified as a source of consistent mechanical noise. Those measures included screening walls around rooftop equipment and baffles on chiller fans. Some of the Aurora facilities that generated the most public concern were built around 2017 or earlier, Davison said. Although that is not old for most buildings, it can be considered old by industry standards. Normal staff is now trying to determine which problems stemmed from the location and design of older facilities and which would remain in newer construction. The research we've done into what a modern brand new data center would look like suggests some of the issues they're experiencing in Aurora would be mitigated, Davison said. Water consumption, electricity demand, and noise are the three issues raised most often in public discussions, Davison said. Data centers can also create concerns about their appearance, stormwater runoff, backup generators, and compatibility with surrounding properties. Water and noise may be easier for planners to address because they can be measured and controlled through engineering and zoning requirements, Davison said. For example, a developer could propose a closed-loop cooling system that recirculates water rather than continually drawing from a municipal or groundwater supply. The town would still need information about how much water the system requires, how often it must be replenished, and where any wastewater would go. Electricity is a bit more complicated. Residents want to know whether a large electricity user could raise lower power bills, strain infrastructure, or require upgrades whose costs might be passed to other ratepayers, Davison said, noting these are reasonable concerns. Answering these questions involves utilities, state regulators, and regional grid operators. Davison said NERMAL is researching the issue and wants utility and regulatory experts involved in the public discussion. She said the town occasionally receives general questions about data centers, battery storage, and other emerging industrial uses, but no formal application is pending. The town also has not drafted an ordinance or reached a staff recommendation on whether data centers should be allowed, and if so, under what conditions. We're in a fact-finding mode, Davison said. She said the town must compare data centers with other developments that should occupy industrially zoned property. The central question is whether data centers create greater or different impacts than other industrial uses, and what enforceable standards would be needed to address them. NERMAL and Bloomington both enacted 6 months moratoriums on data center applications in May to give officials time to study the industry and consider regulations. The NERMAL Town Council approved its moratorium May 18th, pausing applications and permits through November 30th, while the Bloomington City Council approved its moratorium on May 26th for data centers designed to use more than 5 megawatts of power. McLean County did not impose a moratorium, but the county previously limited data centers to manufacturing districts and required special use approval before the county board adopted more detailed regulations on June 11th. The county regulations require developers to disclose projected water use, water sources, electricity demand, and potential effects on infrastructure. They also address noise, wastewater, backup power, emergency planning, road costs, screening, and decommissioning. Davison said that NERMAL is reviewing the approaches taken by Aurora, McLean County, and elsewhere, but has not decided which requirements it may adopt. We don't have a draft ordinance yet, she said. We're just looking at the ones that are out there. Bloomington and NERMAL officials will also hold a joint public meeting on data centers at 5 p.m. on August 26th at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Bloomington announced the date during its July 13th City Council meeting. Davison said working together makes sense because residents in both communities are raising similar concerns. Everyone has the same questions and concerns, she said. We don't need to talk about it two different times. Organizers want the meeting to include environmental, legal, regulatory, and utility expertise, not only representatives of the data center developers. Davison said the Ecology Action Center could provide an environmental perspective, and she has contacted the Illinois Pollution Control Board with questions about state noise regulations, but the panel has not been finalized. The public meeting is intended to share information and answer questions, not serve as a formal hearing on an ordinance or proposed development. Bloomington and NERMAL would hold separate hearings if either municipality later proposes any zoning changes. We're trying to get the facts, Davison said. People can still think they should not be a use that we have in this community. We just want to make sure we have the facts so people can have a better informed opinion. And from the Veterans Corner, Steak and Shake teams up with the VA to increase veteran business ownership. Most of us in the Central Illinois region know that the very first Steak and Shake was in NERMAL. Today, Steak and Shake is headquartered in Indiana and is owned by Bill Glory Holdings, Incorporated. Since its founding in 1934, the restaurant chain has grown and contracted. According to ScrapeHero.com, there are currently 392 locations nationwide across 23 states and territories. Earlier this month, the VA announced a new agreement with Steak and Shake. The agreement will waive franchise fees for veterans who become Steak and Shake owner-operators through the company's franchise partner program. A signed memorandum of understanding lists three major bullet points according to news.va.gov. Steak and Shake will waive its $10,000 fee under its franchise partner program for veterans seeking to run their own Steak and Shake franchise. Steak and Shake restaurants across the nation will promote awareness of VA health care and benefits through restaurant signage and on its website. Steak and Shake will prioritize the hiring of veterans and VA beneficiaries, including family members, caregivers, and survivors, for leadership positions across the company. What is the controversy around Take Care of America's Veterans Act? You may have heard about the Take Care of Americans Veterans Act, or TCAVA, and may have seen or been a part of some heated discussions. The McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission seeks to provide information about happenings that may affect veterans in the wider veteran community. The following is not an endorsement or a rejection of the act as it is written, or any veteran service organization, person, or party. Please note, on Thursday, July 16th, the House postponed the planned vote on House Vote 9237. Some background. In 2022, as part of the typical process for changing how they will evaluate disabilities, the Department of Veterans Affairs published proposed rules changed to the VA schedule for rating disabilities, or specifically for tinnitus and sleep apnea, and solicited public comment on these changes. For those unfamiliar with VASRD, the VA website explains it as the collection of federal regulations used by the Veterans Benefits Administration claims processors to evaluate the severity of disabilities and assign disability ratings. VA is in the process of updating all 15 body systems of the VASRD to more accurately reflect modern medicine and provide clear rating decisions, according to VA.gov. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has been the owner of updates to the VA schedule of rating disabilities. After reviewing public comments, the VA can rescind a rule, make changes, and/or issue a final ruling. Once the final rule is published, it becomes law, usually a few weeks or months after the review ends. The controversy? At the heart of the controversy over TCAVA seems to be Section 108. This bill includes VA's proposed changes to the rating schedules for sleep apnea and tinnitus. If passed as written, those rating schedule changes will become part of the law. American Legion's National Commander Dan K. Wiley writes in his letter that the ratings changes are going to happen with or without TCAVA passing. The VA has proposed a rule which estimates say will result in somewhere between $19 billion and $58 billion being diverted from veteran benefits to the U.S. Treasury. That means if we don't act, billions of dollars will go from supported veterans to funding other causes, according to Legion.org. 22 veteran service organizations signed on to a statement dated June 29th, urging Congress to move forward in passing Senate Bill 4788 and House Bill 9237. In this statement, a group of veteran service organizations noted they do not support the rule change and have urged the VA over the past few years to not implement the new rule. However, there has been no change in the VA's position on the proposed changes to tinnitus and sleep apnea. The statement indicates that lacking clarity from the VA as to whether the changes will take place with or without TCAVA passage. It is best for veterans and the wider veteran community to pass the TCAVA and use net savings for veterans. We support advancing the Take Care of Americans Veterans Act because the bill represents a net expansion of benefits and support for the veteran community and contains protections intended to prevent reductions for current beneficiaries. The goodness and positive impact of this package should not be lost in the debate over its financing. Those in opposition. Opponents to the bill include veteran service organizations, veterans of foreign wars, disabled American veterans, and Iraq and Afghanistan veterans of America, who argue financing a package through speculative savings from a proposed VA rating schedule change is wrong. New veterans benefit programs shouldn't be funded by cuts to veterans programs. VFW National Commander Carol Whitmore states the changes to tinnitus and sleep apnea ratings would unfairly penalize disabled veterans, but also because they set a dangerous precedent by allowing Congress to alter disability ratings for budgetary purposes rather than relying on medical evidence and the established principles of the VA rating schedule, according to VFW.org. IAVA CEO Dr. Killeen Hunter concurred, stating, "Today it's tinnitus and sleep apnea. Tomorrow it could be PSD, migraines, toxic exposure conditions, or any other disability that becomes a tempting budget target. Congress should not set the precedent that earned disability compensation can be reduced whenever lawmakers need an offset," according to IAVA.org. As of July 16th, the House leadership pulled the bill from the floor, postponing the vote on the bill. You can see the text for House Bill 9237 in full at congress.gov. See Section 108, reforms relating to Department of Veterans Affairs disability ratings. And what can you do? Whether you oppose or support this bill, you can make your voice heard. Go to congress.gov and input your address on the right-hand side to find out your senator and representative. Call or email them to let them know where you stand on this bill. And this was written by Shannon Tarkowski, who's a veteran service officer at the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission. From Chicago, Cube brings game show Glitz. British TV show comes to Chicago's Michigan Avenue by Ryan Trimble. Flashing lights, LED screen floors, 60 seconds to complete a challenge. All this in a large transparent cube, its sliding door almost but not quite dimming the roar of the crowd outside. If that sounds like a description of a television game show, that's because it is. The Cube was a long-running British show that was briefly adapted for the U.S. run on TBS. But as of this July, it also describes a new attraction to join the resurgent magnificent mile quarter of Michigan Avenue. The Cube, newly opened at the corner of Michigan and Ontario, has a nearly hidden entrance adjoining Marshall's. Inside, it's a flashing electric game show fever dream, an in-person combination of Minute to Win It and Big Brother to play with friends. The Cube, the experience, began its life as The Cube, the television show. The rules of the British program are simple. Contestants must complete many games within an allotted time span. But like any good game show, there is a twist. Contestants play the deceptively simple games within the confines of a large, clear plastic cube. Gameplay begins when the LED screen floor flashes red. This new in-person cube has taken up residence in a former TJ Maxx, fitted out to suggest all the hallmarks of the television program. Here, there is not just one cube, but many, many spread across the floor and joined by bars and tables, a sleek, shining indoor carnival. That atmosphere is thanks to Cube director and creator Edward Mellors. "I'm a showman," he told the Tribune at an opening event Thursday night. "I was born into a carnival family." His family runs the UK-based Mellors Group, an entertainment company that operates carnival amusement parks and fairs. The company traces its roots back to more than 100 years, to Mellors' great-grandfather who ran a shooting gallery and a swing boat ride in the 1980s. Mellors grew up watching The Cube on television, and he knew it would be worth adding to the company's slate of projects, tapping into the competitive socializing trend which had taken root in the UK. The Cube currently has locations in London and Manchester. Now Cube has come to Chicago, which Mellors said won over other American cities due to its connection to the television show. The American version of The Cube on TBS was hosted by Chicago's own Dwayne Wade, who contributed to the conversation when Mellors was searching for a U.S. location. Once Chicago was chosen, Mellors said finding the address was not difficult. "Michigan Avenue is the equivalent of Oxford Street in London," he said, "so it didn't take an awful lot of convincing that it was the right location." The Cube is the latest venture to add to Michigan Avenue's revival, in which the draw is less retail sales, more experiences. Attractions like the Hand in the Eye Magic Venue, new investment in the Looking Glass Theater, the Museum of Ice Cream, outdoor sculpture exhibits, and stores like the Harry Potter Shop and the Starbucks Reserve Roastery offer more than just shopping. Mellors said that venues must be able to offer in-person experiences to get people out of the house. That goes for The Cube. "I want to create a live TV game show," he said, "and you're in it. You're living it." And today's Flick Fact. One word you probably say without thinking was first trademarked through an application filed in Bloomington. Which was it? Underwriter, cheeseburger, lawnmower, or prerequisite? The answer? Cheeseburger. In the middle 1930s, Steak and Shake founder Gus Belt filed trademark applications from Bloomington for both steak burger and cheeseburger. And that's where we'll stop today with part one. Please stay tuned. Part two will begin very shortly.